Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Text 42.
Savitram Prajapatyam cha.
Savitram Prajapatyam cha.
Brahmam Vata Brihat Tata.
Varta Sanchaya Shalina.
Shiloncha iti vai grihe.
Savitram Prajapatyamcha.
Brahmam chato brihat tata.
Varta Sanchaya Shalina.
Shiloncha iti vai grihe.
Savitram.
The thread ceremony of the twice born.
Prajapatyam.
To execute the vow for 1 year.
Cha.
Brahmam. Acceptance of the Vedas.
Cha.
And.
Ata.
Also.
Brihat.
Complete abstinence from sex life.
Tata.
Then.
Varta.
Vocation in terms of Vedic sanction.
Sanjaya.
Professional duty.
Shalina.
Livelihood without asking anyone for cooperation.
Shila Uncha.
Picking up rejected grains.
Iti.
Thus.
Vai,
even though,
Brihe,
in household life. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Then the thread ceremony for the twice born was inaugurated, as were the rules to be followed for at least 1 year after acceptance of the Vedas. Rules for observing complete abstinence from sex life. Vocations in terms of Vedic injunctions. Various professions in household life, and the method of maintaining a livelihood without anyone's cooperation by picking up rejected grains. Purport. During student life, the brahmacharis were given full instructions about the importance of the human form of life. Thus, the basic education was designed to encourage the students in becoming free from family encumbrances. Only students unable to accept such a vow in life were allowed to go home and marry a suitable wife. Otherwise, the student would remain a permanent brahmachari, observing complete abstinence from sex life for his whole life. It all depended on the quality of the student's training. We had the opportunity to meet an avowed brahmachari in the personality of our spiritual master, Om Vishnupad Sri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Goswami Maharaj. Such a great soul is called a Naishtika brahmachari. This is the ideal. It is strongly recommended, and it is not expected that very many can live up to the ideal. Still, Vedic education is to present the best, to offer everybody the best opportunity, and then alternatives. Vedic system is not one path. There are many alternatives for those who cannot be ideal immediately. The idea is to become perfect. The ideal is to make those who are not perfect, perfect. We had the suffix chui. You mentioned yesterday, it's called chui in Panini's grammar. I think it's called just V in Jiva Goswami's system. Siddhi Karanam, we want to make people perfect. We can't assume that they are perfect. If we did, we wouldn't have many candidates. That those who want to begin Krishna consciousness have to be fully qualified. Some occupations, they want to restrict the entrance. Medical occupation in America. The American Medical Association tries to restrict, not to have too many doctors. Too many doctors, and each one will make less money. Or whatever their reason is. They make it very hard to become a doctor. There are less medical schools, especially if a foreigner who's already a qualified, certified doctor, physician, comes to the United States. They make it very difficult for him to get a license to practice in the United States. So they want to restrict. That's whatever the reason is. But the Vedic system is not for restricting opportunities for the path of perfection. The idea is not that we only have a certain quota for liberation. Don't laugh. Some Christians do. The Calvinists believe that only 144,000 people are elected to be saved. You're on the list or not. But we don't have a restricted list of only 1.5 lakhs of souls who can be liberated. Even some Vaishnavas believe that. That not everybody has the potential for liberation. First of all, everyone has the potential, according to our Siddhanta. And everybody, if possible, should fulfill that potential. There's no need for competition. Or in competition in the sense that somebody has to win. For someone to win, someone else has to lose. This is the economic question. Make money. Making money may be virtuous in some sense, but it's the virtue of, just like the virtue of the battlefield. To win, you have to kill somebody else. So in business also, to be successful, you have to see that someone else fails. To put the money in your pocket, you have to take it out of somebody else's. You talk about creating wealth, but really it's taking wealth away from others. It's the real business of business. To convince the consumers to give you their money and you make a profit. To defeat the competition. And if they can go out of business and you get a monopoly, that's the best situation. So destroy your enemies. And exploit the helpless. This is, the Kshatriya should not be in that mentality. Exploit the helpless. Then he's not a Kshatriya. Then he's a businessman. In the dress of a Kshatriya. If his style is to exploit the helpless. Yes, he can kill the enemies. That's his license. But exploitation is not the license of a Kshatriya. He's supposed to be a protector, not an exploiter. The Vaishyas are exploiters. That's their prerogative. Make a profit by hook or crook. Make some money. And it means to take it away from other people. It doesn't mean to to set up a printing press and manufacture money. It means that debt is considered criminal in every country of the world to counterfeit money. You can't just make your own money. You can create wealth by organizing industry. In a sense, that's creating wealth. But even that involves so much exploitation. Okay, you build a factory so that you can mass produce goods and make better quality and many more of them than you could if it was all done by hand. But then you have to induce people to come work in your factory under horrible conditions and pay them as little as you have to. That's exploitation. A Vaishya can't function without exploiting. But that is not ideal. That's third class human life, is to function as a businessman, to do business and exploit others. Second class is to protect at the cost of violence. And first class is to protect without violence. That's the business of a Brahmin. So the ideal is there. The occupational ideal is Brahman. The spiritual ideal is Brahmacharya. If someone can be a Brahman Brahmachari, then he's best. He's made the best use of his human life. And if he can't, let him do the next best. The Vedic system, therefore, first of all, the system itself is not aimed only at getting the best, at exploiting. The purpose of the system, as designed by the Supreme Lord, and as elaborated by the great sages who are representing the intelligence of the Supreme Lord, Vedic system is to give everybody full opportunity to fulfill the complete potential of their human life. So those who can't function immediately as ideal people, they should be given appropriate alternatives. Therefore, there's the Varnashram system. If you have a violent nature, okay, channel your violence in protecting the citizens. You have to fight, you have enemies, you think you have enemies, okay? Identify the enemies correctly. Pick the right enemies and destroy them to protect the citizens. That's the business of a Kshatriya. Now, not that you suppress the urge to fight, but you channel it properly. You have a need to acquire property. You can't feel secure in life unless you have wealth. Make money, but do it according to the principles of Vaishya order. And you just want to do the least you have to do and enjoy life? Okay, be a Shudra, but here's the rules. There is an arrangement for everyone not just to be comfortable in this world, but to progress toward perfection. A faithful Shudra is a glorious human being. He is properly situated. Striyo Vaishyas Tata Shudras Tepi Yanti Paramgatim. In that position as a Kshudra, he can attain perfection. He doesn't have to gradually become then a Vaishya, then a Kshatriya, then a Brahmana. He doesn't have to go through those stages. As a Shudra, he can perfect his life. Mami Partha Vyapashritya. If, no matter what they are, Vaishyas, Shudras, women, or worse, and most of us are in the worst category, you know, not even Shudras. And we may think we're men, we're better than women. But in Kali Yuga, the men are worse than women, you know, were in previous ages. They're weaker in their determination. They're weaker in their sense control than women were thousands of years ago. And we're proud of being men. It's all relative. But Krishna says, if they take shelter of me, if they trust me and depend on me, this is devotional service, then even the least qualified human beings, not only they can make some advancement, they can take birth, you know, the next rung up the scale in their next life. No, they can, in this life, attain param gatim, the supreme perfection of life. The smarter brahmanas can ignore or just deny Krishna's promise, but that is Krishna's promise. Mami Partha Vyapashritya. So the orders of life are there. They're to organize human society. But ultimately, the Vaishnavas can transcend that system. It doesn't mean to negate it. We don't want to negate what is necessary to keep human society intact and peaceful. Even if we don't need it, other people need it. And we do need it. We should, at least, even if we don't need it, even if we're a Paramahamsa, we might as well act in our material position to set a proper example. Few will become avadutas and will contradict the rules and ignore them. But most Vaishnavas should remain exemplary, that means set an example for others. by continuing to fulfill their material obligations according to their position in life, even when they actually don't have to for themselves. Even when Krishna was ready to excuse them for ignoring their material responsibilities. But better they don't disrupt human society and set a bad example for others. Krishna says, that's why I name parthasti kartavyam trishu lokeshu kinchana. I don't have any obligations, Krishna says, anywhere within the three worlds. Because I'm always appearing in different places in the world, in different roles. Sometimes I'm a brahmana, sometimes I'm a kshatriya, sometimes a vaishya, sometimes an animal. I have my various avatars, and they appear in different places and times. But in all those situations, I'm never under any material obligation. Anavaptam avaptavyam. There's nothing that I haven't already gotten that I want. Whatever I want, I already have. Varta eva chakarmani. There's nothing that I need to achieve, therefore. But still I'm engaged in work. Why? Yadi ayam, yadi aham navarta yam. Jatu karma nyatandvitaha. Mama vartmanu vartante manushat parta sarvashaha. O Partha, if I didn't engage in work here, doesn't mean, like we were discussing yesterday, lila. This means obeying the laws of the varnashram system. If I didn't do that myself, then people would follow my example, and that wouldn't be good. Utsideyur ime loka, the worlds would become spoiled, all the worlds. Upahanyam imapraja, I would be thus doing violence to my creatures. So therefore, I set an example. And if the Lord himself has set an example, then the devotees want to follow in his example. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chose not to step foot on Giriraj. Madhavendra Puri, when he discovered the Gopal deity, he went up to the top of Giriraj and established a temple there. Establishing a temple means you expect other people are going to climb up on Giriraj also to go to the temple. But some short time after that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to Govardhan, and he decided he's not going to step on foot on Giriraj out of respect. And after that, all the Gaudiya Vaishnavas are not supposed to ever step on Giriraj. Even though the Gopal temple is up there. Of course, now the deity has been moved. The temple is evacuated, but there was some time when Gopal deity was being worshipped by both the Gaudiyas and the Pushimargis together, for one generation at least. But the Gaudiya devotees would not go up on the hill. That is why in Natwar, in Rajasthan. That's why Raghunath Das Goswami appointed the son of Balabhacharya to worship Gopal. He, in fact, turned over the deity to the Balabha Sampradaya because our Sampradaya doesn't step on Govardhan. How can we do the puja on top of the hill? That is following the example of Lord Chaitanya. What he doesn't do, we don't do. What he does, we do. Well, we don't imitate, but the things that he does that are supposed to be followed, we do. He preached, we preach. He chanted Hare Krishna, we chant Hare Krishna. He didn't eat on Ekadasi, we don't eat on Ekadasi. We follow his example. So the devotees set an example the way the Lord did, and that is beneficial for human society. Lord Brahma's contribution is important, that he organized the Varnashram system. The Vaishnavas participating in the Varnashram system is also important for maintaining it. Okay, so I'll stop there. Any questions or comments? Yeah, please.
In his sutras, like given the license to, like, sutras that look down upon if he drinks wine or has, like quite relationships with women outside of marriage and stuff, he's kind of given license to do that. At least in many instances, you see that.
They do it. I don't know if it's, you know, he's given blessings, go ahead and do it.
Right.
I, yeah. No, I mean, those who take the vow of marriage, that's a vow that you won't be having affairs with other women. So even for a Shudra, Shudras don't have any samskaras except for marriage. But that's there, that vow is there. And even Shudras are supposed to, you know, live up to that vow. I'm sorry, but I interrupted you.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes they can just start getting married. They're more like, you know, the Western culture these days. They just step into their girlfriends or their boyfriends.
Yeah.
Instead of getting married. And then,
but that's not true. Even that's not even up to the standard of a Shudra. Shudra is supposed to get married. There's no Brahmachari order for Shudra. They have to get married. You know, the things you have to, the things you need to do to keep Shudras under control. You keep them dependent. You don't give them money of their own. Actually, they shouldn't even get money. Everything should be supplied for them, but they shouldn't have money in their pocket because they'll misuse it. And they should be married to keep them from, you know, to keep them under control. Just like Jewish religion. There's no sanction for sannyas in the Jewish religion. It's not recognized as a religious thing. You're supposed to get married, no matter who you are. So, anyway, I don't want to comment then. But you know, that's the standard for Shudras.
Yeah.
Is that they have to get married.
Well, I was going to ask, maybe it's not so relevant, but what's the difference between like a low class sudra
The defining characteristic of a Shudra that makes him a Shudra and not worse than a Shudra is that he accepts a master and is faithful to his master. He lives and works under someone's authority. He's not independent. If you're low class and independent, then you're worse than a Shudra. That basically is. Of course, the Avanas may respect some authority, but it's because they have to under compulsion. You know, that doesn't make him a Shudra. You have to be faithful to your master, actually dedicated to his service and dependent on him, not just accepting employment or letting yourself be coerced at the point of a sword into following someone. That's not. We mean actually dedication to the service of someone of a higher class. That's the qualification of a Shudra. Paricharya. He has to have a service attitude. If he doesn't even have that, if he's just mercenary or a slave, he's forced to do labor but against his, you know, with no choice of his own, then he's not even a Shudra. Shudra does not mean slave. There may have been some slaves in ancient times, but they're not Shudras. Shudras are indentured servants, you can say. They take a vow, but it's voluntary. They take a vow to be someone's servant, but it's voluntary.
What about in this sligo, what does Varta mean, actually, unless you look it up in the dictionary?
Business. Various kinds of means of making money. In this context, because it's the first order of household life, and the other three orders are described as putting that aside. So Varta is just various endeavors of making money. All occupations, all money-making occupations are Varta. And the other three, but the other three divisions of the household order, one actually tries to live without that, without going out to make money. It's like some Brahmin householders can live on free donations. They don't have to ask for money. Modern Brahmanas, they're always begging for 10 rupees, but that's degraded. A higher class Brahmana doesn't ask for money. He gives his services freely and people give him money. Give him money or whatever he needs. And without asking for any money, he manages. Not that he doesn't do anything. He does plenty of service, but he does it without asking for payment. That's Brahminical. A Brahmin as a teacher should also be unpaid, should not demand a salary. He teaches and the students and the parents of the students and other donors support him. And things go on that way. He may not be rich, he may not be living luxuriously, but he manages. And he's first class, he's a real Brahmin. Then he has the right to pick and choose his students. But if he's paid, he has to take whoever pays the tuition. That's degraded. It's there in the system. Upadhyaya, secondary teacher, second-rate teacher, is the one who gets paid for his teaching. Upadhyaya. But the acharya, the first-class teacher, is independent because he doesn't take money for his service. He doesn't charge the students, especially the students. Someone who hasn't even begun his career in life, where is he going to get the money from? From his parents, take a loan from the government, rob a bank, how do you get the money? But he's not making money, so how is he going to pay the teacher? So it's only fair. Education should be free. And then let the grateful students, when they graduate, make their donations. And let the community who are thankful for the service support the teachers. That's the way it's supposed to be. Then they can function as Brahmins. It requires support. Brahmanas need to be supported, otherwise they can't do very much. Kshatriyas need to be advised by the Brahmins, otherwise they're out of control. So they need each other, Brahmins and Kshatriyas. And the Vaishyas. The Vaishyas are there to give money. They need one another. Okay. Yes.
It all depends on the quality of the student's training.
Yeah.
But isn't it that, it doesn't matter how we train sometimes, it depends on the nature of the person.
Yeah, I don't think Prabhupada means to say that it doesn't also depend on the nature. I think it's sort of a poetic expression there. It all depends. I mean, there are other factors, especially the how much advancement a person's made in the previous life, what he's really ready for, that's his personal qualification. Prabhupada's not denying that. But he's emphasizing the importance of the quality of the training. A person with the potential, but without the appropriate training, will not fulfill his potential. He'll be frustrated. We see so many frustrated persons with potential who can't function as Brahmanas. It's not just that ISKCON is anti-intellectual and is intentionally keeping them from becoming successful. No, it's not a conspiracy to not let anybody be a Brahmana. But the training isn't there. Yeah, I think our leaders now we're begging for Brahmanas. They'd like to have more Brahmanas. But then you have to train them up. You need specific, systematized, organized training. Long-term training. If you want to have devotees actually functioning as Brahmanas. Of course, there are attempts at that. Various kinds of attempts at training up devotees brahminically. Priority should be given to that. It's needed.
Also, you mentioned one thing that how students can pay, not employed anywhere, but when they finish their education, pay out of gratefulness. But still,
maybe better a few years later when they've made some money. The thing is, not all. If you come from a well-to-do family, your parents can give you something. Or you can do some service as your dakshina. You don't have to. It doesn't have to be in form of cash. You go out and do something for the teacher. Yeah, the dakshina is symbolic. You should give something, what you can, to your teacher in the form of service or in the form of something. And then later on in your life, when you become established, you can also support your former teachers. The ashramas of the teachers are supported by the rest of the community, by former students and by other people who like what's being done and they just want to support it. It's not only the graduating students who can give donations. the alumni, you know, later on could give. Okay, so we'll stop there. Thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.